Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts. I'm Kim France.
From a construction zone. And I and I am Jennifer Ramolini. Hello.
I'm from a construction zone. And we are your hosts. And I said it really phlegmy. So I apologize if I'm phlegmy. But Jen, do you know what I realized that I was doing this time last year?
I know exactly what you're going to say. Continue.
Getting married.
I know. Isn't that crazy? It's 1 year already. It's amazing.
1 year of marriage. It's absolutely crazy.
How do you feel?
I feel all right. I mean, you know, I was just reading this kind of dumb piece in the Times that Nicholas Kristof wrote about the argument for marriage and how everybody lives longer and it's happier when they marry and whatever. And it was kind of bullshit, but he had the statistic in it that 50% of all adult Americans are unmarried.
I think that's amazing. I mean, I think it's bad for men. I think that when they take that stat about people who are happier in marriage, I think that's like, I don't understand statistics, but I bet that's like, that is like putting 100% of men who are happier when they're married and like the whatever small portion of women in there. Because I see women in their 50s, 60s beyond single. My single friends are fucking happy and living their lives like to the nines. They're very happy. But, you know, there's something to be said for partnership too. And I don't know what it's like once you get old, but like, you know, I don't want to be negative about marriage that you're in because you're in the first year and it's very nice.
Yeah. Well, both are nice in their ways.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, you never get everything.
You don't ever get everything. You can get a lot of things.
Yeah.
But you can't get everything. No, I'm pretty happy being married. You know, it's funny because a lot of people have asked me since I got married, why I got married.
That makes sense to me, especially women our age.
Women our age, there aren't going to be children. And I never have a good answer. I never have like a, well, you know, based on my research and my emotions, I decided that it would be the right thing for me, you know? I did think we both thought it would be the right thing for us. But
yeah,
I feel like if we were unmarried, our partnership would be as strong. I don't feel like the marriage came in and strengthened it. You know, Paul always says, if you want me to leave now, you have to call the sheriff. And I feel like that's that, you know, that part of it feels more connected.
Right. I don't know. I obviously think about marriage a lot. I think about, not obvious. I don't know if it's obvious to anybody, but I think about it a lot. But, you know, there gets to be a point, especially when you're raising children, that you're like, well, I'm not diving out now. Like, we're so close to the end of this like active job that we decided to do together, you know? And I feel like you're kind of like, especially in these teen years where the kid, my kid, is very tumultuous and just like having like a terrorist in the house. It's like, well, let's see what's on the other side of this, because I don't think we can accurately assess this relationship until we know what's on the other side of this incredibly challenging, you know, mutual, like collective job that we're doing. So I think that's a lot of my friends who are in relationships, partnerships, marriages. I feel like that's, and have kids, that's kind of where you're at, because, you know, that would be really, that would really disrupt the whole fucking thing, you know?
Yeah.
Really, if it's like not that bad, you know? So.
Although I feel like my generation, like all our parents, my parents split up when I was in high school.
Yeah, I think it also is like, would it be financially ruinous? I think that's why rich people get to unconsciously uncouple all the time. They just like slip out one day. They're like, yeah, I'm just going to go live in our other house. And it's not that easy. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that to have that sort of financial constraint, because, you know, I think that there were times where I might have hastily like left my husband, and I have not, and then really found things that I love about him again, or new things that I love about him. So it's, you know, it's a fucking complicated thing.
I was talking about my friend Ann Faison, my wonderful friend Ann Faison, mm-hmm. was in New York last week, and we got together and we were talking about marriage, and she's in a pretty long marriage. And she said, I think the thing that makes it work is that we never wanted to get a divorce at the same time.
Yes, that's the adage. That's how you stay married.
Yeah.
I have such less deep and more petty and dumb news to report.
Please.
So I had something change my life last week. Okay. I went in to try this new thing. I think it's called Daxxify or something. It's a new Botox that lasts a little bit longer. And I'm writing all these skincare stories and, you know, these whatever, how do we soften wrinkles, blah, blah, blah stories. And I went in to try Daxxify, which is the same as Botox, except it lasts, I think, double the amount of time. And anyway, while I was in there, this woman, this doctor who I am in love with, her name is Dr. Ava, and she's in Beverly Hills, and she has a last name that I'm not remembering. Anyway, we were talking about necks, and I was like, what about this fucking neck? And she was like, well, you could do this. You could do a solar wave. You could get filler in your neck. But she was like, you know what your big problem is? And I was like, what? And she was like, you're wearing turtlenecks. And I was like, what?
Oh my God. Somebody's got to tell Diane Keaton.
Okay. So she was like, actually, the turtleneck, first off, pushes up the sort of like whatever the sort of like gullet is in the turkey neck. It pushes it up. So it looks actually less attractive the higher the turtleneck is, right? So it's not the most like aesthetically pleasing, appealing, whatever. But she was like, if you really want to take the emphasis off your neck, you wear lower cut things so that you can see more of your chest and your neck. She was like, this is the mistake that everybody makes, is that they're going higher up when they should be going lower down. And I was like, you have blown my fucking mind.
You know, I kind of instinctively knew that.
I think you did.
Because I always kind of wear, I don't like when you can't see my collarbone.
Yeah.
I feel really unattractive with a high neck.
Yes. I don't know why I didn't. And I've been feeling very like, and I've been wearing turtlenecks since my neck started aging. So like 6 years. Okay. And like, I have summer turtlenecks. I mean, you know this whole thing, right? I have like.
You have short sleeve turtlenecks.
I have sleeveless turtlenecks. I only have turtlenecks. And like, I was looking at pictures of myself and I was like, I look really like Puritan, like I look like Amish. Like I'm really starting to look like, with the giant glasses and I'm getting them tinted more and more, I'm starting to look like Bradley Cooper's mother. Like I'm
bless her.
Bless her. But like I'm not 75.
I know, but your look works. The tinted glasses work. It all works.
It does work, except the last ones I got are so dark. And it was like that and the fucking turtleneck. I'm like, I might as well just start wearing like a ski mask. Like
it's like, it would be ideal if you could just retract into your body like a turtle.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I am here to tell you, because I did really meet with her and really pick this lady's brain. And there are there are quite a few things you can do for a jawline. There's quite a few new fillers. There's biostimulators that you can inject that actually help build a collagen. There's a lot going on in the world of cosmetics that's not surgery.
Amazing.
Have you tried Nubrow?
And you, no, but I know it's I know it's supposed to work really well, and I haven't tried it, and I don't know why, because I barely have any brows left.
My brows are entirely back. They're entirely back except the tails. And yeah. It's not, and it often goes on sale 2-for-1 on Nordstrom. And, but anyway, Grand Brow is supposed to work. Like, all of these brow things works. I don't want the lash things because I don't want to get that close to my eye, but these, but the brow serums really, really work. And like, yeah, if you're feeling it.
I have a question.
Yes.
I bought some lash serum and then I decided not to use it for the reason that you mentioned, because it's close to your eyes. Do you think I can use that on my brows? You think it's the same stuff?
I bet it's the same stuff.
It's got to be the same stuff.
But the other thing that somebody told me, because I've been researching like a brow story, is that our brows, we never like brush them. So they never get, it's just like if your scalp, you need to brush your hair all the time to promote hair growth. We never brush our brows. So I've actually started brushing my brows every night because that also stimulates growth in your brows. Because if not, it's just like skin sitting there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been doing that before I put on the new brow and, you know, whatever. This doesn't have to be a beauty podcast, but I'm just saying this, that my brows were starting to really, it was like starting to be like, 7 hairs that were like black and gray. It was like salt and pepper and like 7 straight hairs, and they're back. So bring your brows back.
You know, when I was in junior high school, I decided to pluck my eyebrows, and I had no idea what I was doing, and I just never grew hair back. They've always been thin because of that. So I'm curious how much brow I can build, but I'm very encouraged because people really say Nubrow works.
Nubrow does work. It's not working on the tails. Like the little, the tails are a little tough. I mean, it is, but then, but also I put it on the wrong place. So now I also have like this patch of hair in like, I just am like so sloppy with everything like that I just like, I was like, oh shit, now it's growing over there. I don't want that.
Oh no, you could get really artistic with it. Like, oh, you know, totally. Hedge.
Oh, you could make hair grow anywhere. I feel like I really do. I was thinking about jobs I would be bad at. What job do you think you would be the worst at?
I would be the worst at, air traffic control. I mean, there are many, many, many jobs I would be bad at, and they all are jobs that involve a great deal of organization.
Yes, yes, yes. And precision. I would be like the world's worst surgeon. Like I like I cut corners. I need a job that I can cut corners, that I know well enough that I can cut corners constantly, because I have very little attention to detail. It's just like order of operations. That was when I started to fail math. I was like, oh shit, you have to do this in a specific way, you know?
Yeah.
And precision. Like I can't cut a straight line on a, on paper. Like no.
Me neither. I'm very unprecise.
Yeah. That would be terrible. But my kid asked me what job I would have liked to have done if I wasn't doing what I do now. What would you like to have done if you weren't doing what you do now?
I think I would have liked to have been, I don't know if I had the talent for it, but I would have liked to have been a TV writer or something like that. Write screenplays.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not, it's still writing, so it's not such a, but I think, that.
Yeah.
What about you?
I've always liked, I like accents and studying accents and language. I think I would have liked to have been a linguist, also a horticulturalist. Also, anything that's not in media, like I would have just like, I would have liked to have lived a, as much as I like to be seen, I think I would have liked to have lived a life that was a little bit, that was less public and more engaged in like work that was like private and solitary, but that then at the end, you didn't have to fucking like put out something and tap dance for everybody.
Right. I have a friend who's a writer and also a gardener. I don't have a green thumb. I have the opposite of a green thumb. I'm very bad with plants, but I love the idea of growing shit.
Yeah, I too am very bad. And I think it has to do with, like, again, like following directions and order of operations and consistency, like all of the things that would make me like bad at most jobs. But I have taught myself, like, I have a lot of plants in this house right now. And I was just so sick of them dying all the time that I've sort of like gotten into a rhythm with my plants that they're kind of staying alive right now, you know, fingers crossed. But every year I try to garden and every year it's a spectacular failure. Like this year, yeah. I'm going to grow arugula. Let's fucking see. Probably not.
Gardening's cool. I mean, I think if we're thinking in a like do what you love kind of way.
Yeah.
Like, I still think it was a really good idea to, like, start a weed brand for middle-aged women.
Wait, the listeners, back up. Listeners, a couple of years ago, and we were not high when we had this thought. We were like, you know what we need is an everything is fine gummy. That's it. We were like, that's the $1 million, $1 billion idea. And then, like, you know, I talked to a couple of like weed people and they were like, it's so fucking complicated, like, because every state has different laws around this. And it's like, you know, you can't distribute it. And, you know, it was so much more complicated than either of us could even begin. Like, we needed like a third person who was very into like, whatever that is that I could never do. But yeah, no, I could imagine. I enjoyed working on the weed site because of that. But eventually you get sick of anything is the truth.
No, that is really true.
You know, eventually you're just like, ugh, I don't know. Like eventually you're just like, oh, potheads.
I know.
Even that, even the deep pleasure. I became a Fitfluencer this weekend.
No, I saw. I saw, actually. And it made me feel bad. I was like, Jen got this, like, I'll let you describe it, but it was a thing you wear when you work out. A workout vest that makes you weigh more so that everything, like, you're working out harder. I don't need the workout vest. I weigh more naturally.
Oh, come on. No, but it's not just about that. It's also like about your posture. I don't know what the hell it's for. Like, honestly, I like follow a bunch of menopause doctors that we always say we're going to have on and then we never do. And I'm always like, I should reach out to this lady. And then I don't. I really need some ADHD meds and I need them fast. But I see them wearing these weighted vests and I was like, maybe that's the solution to all of my problems. Like maybe mm-hmm. the weight is always, there's got to be one solution to my problems. So I got this weighted vest and it's 12 pounds. And the reason I became a Fitfluencer is because I just put up a picture of it and it was the most response I've ever gotten to a social media, anything in my life. Everyone was like, tell me where to get the weighted vest. And I was like, Amazon, you too can have the... Prime 2-day shipping. Let's just give Bezos all our money. Anyway, so I put it on. I chose wrong. I chose too heavy. Of course I did. I went too hard. I totally injured myself on day one of the weighted vest. Oh. Every muscle in my body was just like aching. But I do love it. And I'm going to get I got 12 pounds. I started with 12, but I'm going to get 6 and I'm going to work up to it. And it's just supposed to be good for, like, you know, building muscle, strengthening your bones. And it's just like anything that's like easy, you know, anything that's mm-hmm. like I could just add this one thing to what my life already is. And, you know, I don't know. I want to be fit.
I want to be fit, too. And I'm really feeling it. I'm really feeling it. And I just need to do something.
It's hard.
It's hard to get started. I mean, and the other thing about me is the last time I was very was pretty fit. You know, maybe 5 years ago when I was going to a lot of yoga.
Okay.
And once I start going, I have to go all the time. I get so compulsive about exercise. You know, it becomes really obsessive.
Could you have like a obsessive, like, you know, 3 days a week?
Yeah. I mean, if I got to 3 days a week right now, I'd be really happy. And I have to find a physical therapist. I got to deal with my knee.
Yeah.
Like the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, I know. I have this bad shoulder situation.
I mean, my mom's like, maybe I said this the other day, but like my mom's job now is going to doctors. Like it's her, she has hobbies and things like that. So I won't say it's her hobby.
Yeah.
But like and it's not even like she just wants to know she's okay, I think.
Yeah, poor thing. Yeah, yeah, of course.
But I think she gets something out of it. I don't think it's a poor thing situation. I think she actually like it makes her feel stronger to keep going to the doctors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, it makes her feel like, you know, her health is validated.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I mean, we all have such a weird relationship with doctors. It's hard though. It's tricky. And as you start to get older, because it used to be like, oh, you're fine because you're young. And you're like, oh, yeah. No, you're not fine because you're not young. You know?
I used to go to my mother's GP. And the first time I went to go see him was probably 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And I was like, Mom, he's so fucking chatty. Like, I can't stand it. He just, yeah. You know, when they examine you and then you go sit in their office and and I was like, he just talked and talked and talked. And then 10 years pass. I'm not quite as cute anymore, but I have things I'm really worried about. No longer chatty. Like, when I'm ready to chat with the doctor, when I've got a laundry list, not interested.
No, it's not. It's not the same. I mean, nothing's the same. Not one thing is the same as it was even in your 40s, your early 40s. It's like once you reach like the full middle age, nothing is the same anymore. Not one thing. The way the world responds to you, because the way the world responds to you, whether or not this is your role, is they respond to you like a mom. This is the same thing with Hollywood actresses, how they can't get roles except mom after a certain age. You know, it's the same thing. It's just, you know, you remind me of my mom, and or in that doctor's case, probably not his mom. But, you know, you remind me of an older person. No.
Yeah. No, it's true. Everything changes.
Yeah. You no longer have like the shine of youth that like everybody kind of wants a little piece of, you know?
Yeah. And little did I know, I kind of hung on to that shine of youth for a long time. But, you know, when it goes, it goes.
Let's take a quick break from some ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Support for Everything is Fine comes from Ritual. So I love Ritual. Everyone knows I love Ritual. I talk about Ritual all the time. I particularly love their daily multivitamin. And I also really have been enjoying their melatonin. But the thing I love most about Ritual is their Hyacera. It's a once daily skin supplement that's clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to a placebo. Hyacera led to 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. You can enhance your skincare routine from the inside out with one daily capsule essenced with soothing vanilla. I love Hyacera. It's been rigorously tested and validated. It's one of the industry leading sustainability. It meets all of the industry leading sustainability standards. You know, I'm a beauty editor now. I am all about keeping my face plump. And Hyacera absolutely has done that for me. I've been on it for months. I don't even know how long. And I can really see a difference in the texture of my skin. My skin looks more juicy, I guess, is the best way to do it. Say it, do it. Okay, so you can start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/fine. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription to get today. That's ritual.com/fine for 25% off. And we're back. Okay, what have you been watching this week?
Do you know what I watched a little bit of? Because it's on Netflix now, is Sex and the City.
Me too!
I watched some of the first season of Sex and the City.
I did the same thing because I was like, I was weaving. And I was like, I just want something on the background. And yeah, okay, what did you think? Tell me.
I mean, it was, you know, Sex and the City was based on a column that was in the New York Observer, as you know. But yes. Maybe the listeners don't know, that was written by this woman, Candace Bushnell. And I was reminded watching these early episodes that, like, it was much edgier at the beginning. It was much funnier about men and women together and men and women in New York.
You know,
it was, it you know, for me, it just, especially by the time the movies came out, it just devolved into like Cosmos and Samantha saying outrageous things no straight woman really says. All of that. And it just, it felt like a cartoon of itself.
You know,
before like Magnolia Bakery and, you know, Manolo Blahniks blew up. It was just kind of this funny little show about like relationships in New York.
No. And the pilot in particular is kind of like a noir. Like the pilot is, and there's a lot more tenderness to it too, I think. And there's really women kind of grappling, heterosexual women grappling with, you know, being independent women, but also trying to have a conventional domestic life, which is a real tension, you know, I think in the 90s and 2000s. And I felt like that conflict was much more authentic and honest in those early episodes. I mean, and of course, you know, I mean, the cast of Friends like looks totally different in season two than they do in season one. It's like once you get, you know, once the clothes just became so outrageous and it became all about consumption and, you know, I've been enjoying it. I think I got up to like episode five and I was like, oh, I kind of like this.
Yeah, no, it was fun. And it made me, the show premiered in 98. So it looks like the late 90s, you know, it really, it's a little bit of a nostalgia jolt as well to watch it.
Well, it's always intense to see the World Trade Center too. Like, whoa, that is so, it's like, oh, you remember just being there.
Yep. And no matter where you were in the city, you could always tell if you were downtown or uptown because you could see the towers.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. So weird. Yeah. So weird. I've also been watching Ripley.
Oh, what do you think of it?
I'm giving it right now. If I had to grade it, I'd give it a 7.
Okay. All right. I mean, he's amazing.
He's amazing. Always Andrew Scott. It's a series based on The Talented Mr. Ripley, the Patricia Highsmith book.
Yeah, yeah.
And, or the series, actually. I think it's a series of books. And he plays the character that Matt Damon played in the movie a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's dark. It's very dark. But it's a little simmering, you know, it hasn't gotten really evil yet. And I also don't know if I want to watch an evil person.
Yeah. Yeah. I just heard an interview with him and he was saying that, you know, you have to, because Terry Gross was throwing around the words like psychopath and sociopath. And he was taught, and they had weirdly had a kind of a contentious interview, which doesn't usually happen with Terry Gross. And at one point, you know, he says, well, you know, my job is to get inside of the character and to have compassion for the character so that I can play the character, you know? And he was like, I need to understand what motivates this person. And so I don't throw words like that around. Like I need to understand this person and I'm character first. And I thought it was just so interesting, like thinking about playing evil. I love the original Talented Mr. Ripley. I love Jude Law in it. I love Gwyneth Paltrow in it. I love Matt Damon in it. I love Philip Seymour Hoffman in it. I love Kate Blanchett.
So good.
I love Kate Blanchett in it. I love the color of it. I love the costumes. I love, you know, just it's so like big cinema, you know, atmospheric. Yeah. And I was very disappointed to see that this is in black and white, because the best thing about Talented Mr. Ripley, or one of the best things, is like the color and
the beauty.
And yeah, the beauty, and like Dickie coming alive and just looking at his tan, sweaty skin, and Gwyneth Paltrow being sort of this perfect, beautiful, like expat wasp. And, you know,
yeah,
just so the precision of it, the details. So when I saw this was black and white, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's black and white in more than color.
Okay. You know? Okay.
I think, but you'll see what you think.
Yeah.
I'm giving it, I think something big is going to happen in the episode I just started. So
okay,
we'll see.
I've been watching a lot of comedy.
Yahoo.
Well, I watched Rami's special, which I think is really excellent, and I think people should check out. I also watched this. His name is Alex Edelman, and he wrote a special. Oh, it's called Just for Us. And it's really, really, really funny and amazing. And he's a Jewish American man, and he goes to a white supremacist like meetup in Queens. And that's sort of the premise of it, but it gets into all sorts of interesting places about Jewish identity. And I thought watching Alex Edelman was really good. And it's really, really funny. And he's very, very neurotic in a way that I love a fast neurotic brain so much. And Alex Edelman totally had it. So that was good. And then I've been watching the Gerard Carmichael reality show, which there's a lot of controversy around that right now. But I've been enjoying it.
Huh.
It's a very raw, raw picture of what it is to be a young gay black man. You know, there's anybody can look at the controversy, but I think it's a reality show that feels like it's sort of breaking the form a little bit. And I was into it. But so, yeah, 2-3 things I watched.
Cool. I would like to watch some new comedy.
I feel like
I could use some comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Gerard Carmichael, like I've been mixed on his stuff, but I think this is really, it's really interesting about sex and about, you know, repression. And anyway, nothing's particularly light of these three things that I've been watching, except Sex and the City. But
yeah. Can you believe, because I've been thinking about this a little, that COVID, like we were spraying down our groceries 4 years ago today.
Oh my God. I think that we are not over the collective trauma of that experience. You know, I think that is really was fucked us all up.
I think it did fuck us all up. I continue to think about the gifts of COVID though.
Wow. Wow. Tell me about that. That's interesting.
Like I saw my friend Anne, as I was saying, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, we went to college together. We'd been in touch, but it was really COVID that brought us back together.
Okay. Okay.
As close friends. COVID brought me and you back together.
Yes, totally.
Really. I feel like I connected with a lot of people during that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though it was desperately lonely and I was alone.
With
dogs, and then one of the dogs died, and that was awful. And, but I do think there were gifts to it that, you know, just like the way the earth kind of came back a little.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like we squandered that fucking as soon as we could, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what are like the gifts of like, of finding what's important in life, of like what?
I would say, I mean, the gifts of COVID for me, like friendship, that was a big one.
Yeah.
Renewed friendships was really important. Also, relationships with my family.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I would have cocktail hour every day at 6 with my younger brother.
Yeah.
Which I think I've mentioned here before, but you know, it wasn't because he wanted to have cocktail hour every day. It's because he knew I was alone.
Yeah. I guess for me, I feel like I wish that, I don't know, I guess in my mind, I felt like we would change coming out of COVID, and that we would maybe learn a lesson in this super divided country and like the way we treat the planet and the way we treat each other. And I think that there's been, for me, a kind of disappointment of like, oh, we just kind of went back to just being the same old fucks we always were.
Well, because the pandemic itself was polarizing.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like 9/11 where it was like, oh my God, we're all suddenly one people.
Yeah.
And really it felt like in New York after 9/11, it felt like there was this community and people caring about each other. COVID just drove both groups further to their corners.
Yeah. In some ways. And for me, it really separated me from my family, you know, as family members were, you know, we weren't believing the same scientific facts. You know, like we were just having different opinions about facts. And I think that things sort of came out about, you know, people that you wouldn't have necessarily known and maybe you don't want to know. Like, this is a thing I've worked with some of my friends. Like over the years, I would work with some friends and I had a couple of friends that I wound up not going on and knowing after working with them because I found it intolerable how they worked. Like, I didn't know that they worked like this. They were lazy. They were conniving. They were whatever. And it's like, sometimes you just shouldn't see all parts of a person, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I feel like that was something that happened with COVID. Like some parts of our, like we're showing our asses in ways that maybe we didn't need to see.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
And making lots of sourdough.
I'm making so much sourdough. Oh my God. And like growing our own scallions. Like, I mean, if you really think about it, it's like, it's so ridiculous. It's so unbelievable. Like what we did.
I know.
It's crazy. I mean, what we did to get through. I mean, I remember I was just tie-dyeing everything in my house.
That's so funny.
I was just like, what other like fiber art can I learn?
That's great though.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I was listening to some Brazilian music the other day and it really brought it home because I was listening to lots of like 60s Brazilian music when COVID happened. And music can always bring you back.
Yeah.
Such a way. But I don't know. I have a kind of like nostalgia would be too strong a word. Because I am obviously very happy that we're not all in a pandemic anymore. But I have this kind of poignant feeling about the COVID time, like that it was difficult, but also renewing.
I think probably it was a real time of transition in your life. And, you know, I understand that. Yeah, I guess it was a time to sort of be thoughtful and sort of think about what you wanted. And there's a quiet to it. And the lack of like social obligation, I think, sort of left us to, you know, have deeper insights about our lives and what we were doing with them. I don't have nostalgia for it, but I just am disappointed in it more than anything else.
Yeah.
You know, that's my whole thing. And I'm also like, you know, how much did it fuck up kids? Like, that's my
other
thing. Well,
that is from talking to the parents I know, I do feel like the kids got really broken.
Yeah. I worry about that so much in this next generation having lived through it. But, you know, the thing is, it's still going on. There's still COVID. You just get COVID now. Like, it's weird. But also, like, I don't like what it exposed. I don't like how it exposed how little we care for the weakest among us. I don't like, there are just things that it exposed to me that I just I'm uncomfortable with. But, you know,
I get it.
Whatever. I'm glad it's over. Let's say that we're mostly over. I'm glad that worst part is over.
Yeah, I am. And I am too. And I would just say it was a time. You know, it's not a time I'm nostalgic for. I'm obviously glad we're over the, hopefully the worst of it ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was a time with some hidden gifts. That's all.
For sure. And I think it's good to look at everything in your life as like, where were the hidden gifts? You know, like that's helpful, even in the fucking darkest time. Should we answer some listener questions?
If you're up for it, I'm up for it.
Okay. Have either of you ever used creme de la mer? And did you pay for it? What are the properties of this mystical potion? What do you think about it?
Well, when I was going through radiation, Jean Godfrey June, who was the beauty director of Lucky, got me a huge tub of creme de la mer, like the $1,000 tubs.
Somehow,
you know, called that in for me and gave it to me because creme de la mer was supposed to be very good for breasts going through radiation. And I used it and, you know, my breasts, you know, it got red, it burned, but, I always thought it did help a bit, but then didn't you tell me that the ingredients in creme de la mer are the same as the ingredients in Aquaphor?
I was just about to drop this. So last year there was this lab, it was like called like Regimen Lab. It was like a peer-reviewed skincare brand, and they compared Nivea's regular cream, CREME, with La Mer, and they found that the two use the exact same base ingredients, right? So then on top of that, creme de la mer has like, La Mer has like some marine peptides or whatever. But basically, Nivea is the exact same as La Mer, and as particularly German Nivea is exactly the same as La Mer. So I would never pay money for that. I would never pay money for a moisturizer. I would never pay big money for a moisturizer because every dermatologist will tell you that a regular just moisturizer, you just want a moisturizer. Like First Aid Beauty is really good. Nivea is really good. Like the things I'd pay money for are like vitamin C serums and some like acids, like hyaluronic acids. And like there's some serums I would spend money on because I feel like their formulations are pretty good. It depends on the concentration of ingredients. But I would never pay for La Mer ever in my life because I don't think it does shit.
Yep. I wouldn't either.
I think it's just an emollient, like, and you want an emollient, but you don't need to pay a lot of money for it.
It's just like a Louis Vuitton bag for your bathroom.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I find my younger colleagues, male and female, in their 20s, 30s, to be much more, as other older colleagues have described it, entrepreneurial and adept at promoting their, quote, brand. I want to support their success, but the difference in style is, well notable. You and I are in different fields, but I'm wondering if you've encountered this and how best humanely and professionally to respond. I think that you don't have to do anything you don't want to do anywhere on social media, at home, in anywhere in your life. And if you don't feel like supporting, if you don't feel like it is, you know, organically who you are to be supporting entrepreneurial younger colleagues who are, you know, trying to build their own brand, you could just be like, I'm not very active on social media. It's fine.
Yep. I agree. Everybody's different on social media and there's no reason to feel compelled to respond.
Don't knock the hustle, but you don't have to make it. You're not obliged to do anything with it. And I don't think the cool thing is about the young people, they just look at it as olds anyway. They'd be surprised if you did promote their stuff, honestly. Okay.
Yes, I think you're right.
Okay. I think I am done with shorts during the summer months. Summer in my area is very hot, 90s and above, and is not unheard of to have a string of multiple triple-digit temps multiple times throughout the summer. What are some cute, inexpensive sundresses I can wear to just run errands in and hang out in? And then there's a question about eye cream is a scam, but I do love applying it. I have my favorite night cream, but are there suggestions for day use you would recommend? I think caffeine is a good ingredient for under your eyes, just to answer that. I think that caffeine has been proven to decrease the appearance of fine lines and like puffiness, depuff your eyes. So anything with a high concentration of caffeine for an eye cream, you should get. But the dresses, what do you think?
Well, one thing to do if you don't want to spend a lot of money is to go to H&M, search on dresses, and do the cotton filter.
That's right.
They often have like really good lightweight cotton caftans and dress and shirt dresses and things like that. So that's one place to look.
And mango.
Although mango is, you got to search on cotton always.
Yes, always cotton. Yeah.
because especially if we're talking about less expensive retailers, a lot of times it's a blend.
Yeah.
You know, I like a universal standard. I think this dress they have called the Geneva dress is a great t-shirt dress. It comes V-neck, it comes long sleeve, it comes short sleeve, super cute. And for a little more money, Frank and Eileen makes a really great shirt dress in about 1,000 different iterations with different fabrics and things.
Yeah. And then just find like a comfortable pair of thin shorts to wear underneath the dresses. Like I find that, well, for me, I don't like just my legs just being out anymore. I'm just not as comfortable with it. I like having like a little like the Kim France pants, honestly.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Kim France pants, the middle-aged edition. And I, you know, if you find like a thin, like it doesn't have to be shapewear, but just like a little like thin cotton biker short to wear underneath, I feel like then you're just in a dress and you're more comfortable. Your thighs aren't rubbing together. You're not getting all of that rub problem. But I agree. That is totally my trick. The H&M cotton dresses. I got a couple of really good ones last year, a couple of good t-shirt dresses. And like, you know, if you're going to wear them for years and years, again, fast fashion is not great. 100% cotton is better. H&M does have a green line. And if you're going to wear them for a while, you don't have to feel so bad about paying, you know, $25 for a dress.
Yep, I agree.
Let's see. Does anyone entertain anymore like our parents did, e.g. have people over for a sit-down dinner with wine and fancy china? No. I don't ever like we had someone come over a couple weeks ago. Alex's friend was in town who I had never met before. And because he met him on a recent project, whatever. He was in town and he was coming over at 6 o'clock. He was coming over right from the plane and whatever. And I was like, well, don't I have to make dinner for him if he's coming over at 6 o'clock? And Alex was like, well, we didn't discuss that. And I'm like, if he's coming over at 6 o'clock from the plane, like I need to make dinner. So I was already kind of making dinner. So I just like added like a couple of extra sides and it was nice. Like we had like this very nice dinner. I lit some candles. We had wine. There was no fancy china because I don't own fancy china, but like it was nice to have a person over for dinner, which is a thing I don't do anymore. I don't know if people do we just not do that anymore? Because
I feel like people throw dinner parties. Nobody I know.
I'm never invited to a dinner party and I'm a fun guest. I feel like I would be invited to a dinner party if they were happening, but maybe I'm wrong. Or maybe it's LA. I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like I was a big party thrower in my 20s and 30s. I loved to throw a party.
Same.
And when I lived with my old boyfriend, Charles, my very old boyfriend, Charles, in Williamsburg back in the early 90s, we would have like Passover seders and things.
Yeah.
And people would come. But now I feel like, and there's nothing wrong with my house. I have a nice house.
Yeah.
But I'm like, people can't come here.
Same.
You know, people can't come here. There's crap everywhere. What will I do with all my crap?
Well, I mean, I as discussed, I'm a good stager. My house is always staged. Open a closet and you'll be injured. Mm-hmm. But like the house is staged. It's not just that. I mean, the house cleanup is like a 45-minute situation, but it's more like, what are we going to do? We're going to sit at the table and eat dinner. Then what do we do? Like, I can't,
yeah.
It's just, we don't do it anymore. And I don't know why. I used to love being a host. I have no idea why. I have no idea how that ended for me. But no, I think the answer to this listener's question is no, we don't do that anymore. We just don't.
No. And if some of you do, please let us know. I'm curious.
Yeah. Please let us know how you're doing it and what you're doing. I think, you know, I would love to start up again. Will I start up again when I don't have a kid around anymore? Like, is that a thing I'll do? Or is it just dinner parties are just over?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I feel like Cokie Roberts was having dinner parties until like the day she died. I feel like there's like an NPR New York, like uppers, like Upper East, Upper West Side. Like people are just like, come to my house. And it's like Kurt Anderson comes over and it's like,
that is so funny you should say that because I was thinking about the movie, The Orchid Thief.
Based
on Susan Orlean's book. And there's this great like scene where like where Susan Orlean, the character Susan Orlean,
yeah.
is at a New York dinner party.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And everybody's being like, it's a small table full of people being just super clever and things. Yes. It's like, does that happen?
That's what I'm saying. I feel like Tina Brown had, is it because nobody owns property anymore that's big? Like, I feel like Tina Brown had like legendary dinner parties. Like, I know about them. I have a friend who like had sex with Lauren Hutton after one of them. Like,
no, you don't.
I do indeed.
Amazing.
And like, yes, I want to be invited there. A man.
No, I'm just like, what was the age of, was this man much younger than Lauren Hutton?
Yeah, he was my age.
Good on her.
I know. Well, exactly. If you're Lauren Hutton, you're, oh my God. Okay. Before we go, which I think we are going to go, we have to tell listeners what's been happening. I don't know why this isn't. If anybody has an answer, please let me know. So I don't even know if this is going to be funny, but sometimes when I'm talking, for reasons we cannot understand, on my side of the screen, either balloons pop up or a thumbs up. What is happening? Is it like...
And it happened last week when Emily Gould was discussing something not unserious.
It was very serious. And all of a sudden, in my side of the screen, just balloons were surrounding my head. And it just happened that over my face, a thumbs up sign just appeared. I am not doing shit. The machines are coming for us. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, my God.
Oh, okay. Before we go, I have an announcement, and I think it's really going to happen this time. I am launching a Substack called Extended Scenes, where I'm going to talk about, the behind the scenes of writing a book and aging and ambition and no longer turtlenecks, apparently. Like, that's over. But I had a very nice friend at Substack, Christina, walked me through how to make a Substack this week. And so next week, hopefully, if I get my shit together, I am launching a Substack. So more fun things for us and for us together on Substack. Thanks for listening to Everything is Fine from the construction zone of Brooklyn. We are your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, please rate and review it on all the platforms, especially Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show and it makes a difference. I've been yelling, even though the construction is not on my side. I've just been yelling this whole episode. I'm so sorry, listeners. I've been yelling over the construction. Okay. If you want to support the production of this show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/everythingisfine. You can find Kim on her Substack, kimfrance.substack.com. You can find me on my Substack, jenromolini.substack.com. If you want to follow us on social media, we're at EAF Podcast on Instagram, which I've been locked out of that account and I have to get back in. Jesus Christ. I know. I just have to figure, I tried the wrong password too many times. We have a robust and private Facebook group that you can join that's free. And the show is mixed and edited by the wonderful Natalie Rivera. Thanks again, Natalie. We love you, and we'll be back next week.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.